And take your Bibles and find the 19th chapter of the book of 1 Kings. And tonight we start a new segment in our Elijah series. And I've entitled this, Elijah Receives His Death Warrant from Jezebel. And we're going to read about that in just a moment. So I worked hard at getting the best picture of Jezebel and Ahab that I could find. And I want you to notice, if you could see it up close, her fingernails and claws are extended. She is angry, and Ahab has reported to her fake news. Can you believe it? Fake news all the way back in that era. And it angered her. And we're going to read about it in just a moment. A great victory was won on Mount Carmel for Jehovah. God's people turned their minds and hearts around and declared that Jehovah was the God. And they did it repeatedly. Thousands of people were on the mount that day, including the old vile king himself. And he saw how quickly people turned back from Baal to Jehovah. However, we realize in the reading tonight, going from the end of chapter 18 and beginning in chapter 19, that Satan does not surrender easily, nor does he give up quickly. He is fast on the rebound with another master plan to destroy God's people and God's man. Jezebel was mad-tempered. She's always been that way. She took after her dad. Her father was a vile and wicked man that introduced Baal worship to the nation of Israel, the northern tribes. She is now filled full of bitter anger. So bitter that when they got to the city, when Ahab on his chariot rode into the city of Jezreel, and the prophet stopped at the city limits or the city gate, he did not go in. It was raining. Mud was everywhere. It was a hard rain. We discovered that last week. The same word to describe the flood is used in chapter 18 to describe the rain on Mount Carmel and in Israel that day. People were thankful. God had sent fire from heaven and consumed the sacrifice that he was pleased with, and the false prophets of Baal could not get Baal to respond. Elijah went up on the mount, and with his head between his knees, he prayed until the rain came. And he told the old wicked king to get in his chariot and get home quick, or he'll get caught in the mud and never make it. And he supernaturally, probably barefooted, ran so fast for that 25 miles that he beat the king to the city. The king went in. And here's what verse 1 says of chapter 19. Look at it there with me, if you would, please. And Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done. Now watch the emphasis of the verse. And withal how he had slain all the prophets with the sword. Now she did not know what had happened on Mount Carmel. All she knew is that it was finally raining after 3.5 years. He did not go into any description in verse 1 about everything that took place. What did this vile, wicked king do? He did with his wife what he knew he could do to anger her. So he told the story with all the facts that would control her and make her mad. He spoke about how Elijah killed 450 prophets with the sword. isn't it too bad that he did not go home and say, Jezebel, I saw the most incredible thing in all my life. The prophets of Baal could not call down fire. They cut themselves, they cried out, they threw themselves on the altar. But when Elijah, the man of God, put his sacrifice on the altar and saturated it with water and prayed a simple prayer, fire fell from heaven and consumed the sacrifice, the altar, the water that was in the trench around the altar. It was amazing. And the people began to worship Jehovah and claim him to be God. He said nothing about the truth of that. He said one line that would control her anger. How sad that is. Elijah, a bold prophet, heard the messenger as Jezebel dispatched the messenger. She did not dispatch the executioner. She knew that would be unwise. She was smarter than that. She dispatched a messenger. You go tell Elijah that just as sure as he has killed the prophets of Baal, the Lord take my life if he is not dead before tomorrow. So a death warrant went out on Elijah's life by the most vile, wicked toad that ever sat on a throne. What a terrible woman she was. So here's what I want you to do with me this evening. I want you to consider three overwhelming facts about this death warrant. We won't be able to get to all three of them tonight, but I want you to, let me give them to you ahead of time. In just a moment, we'll look at Elijah's displeasure. This man was persecuted unmercifully. Then we will see Elijah's despair and how he was overtaken with self-pity, how he became a pessimist. When one day he was filled with the Spirit of God and spoke in great power and boldness and authority, Jezebel had affected him with this death warrant immensely. Often when God gives us a great victory, the devil comes immediately to steal it away and make our life more difficult. He is relentless, and it will be that way until Jesus comes. Matter of fact, Elijah's determination that we will see would be how God brought him through that under tremendous pressure, to the point of not even wanting to live. So the proposition is simple for us. This is the takeaway. This is the big picture. This is the takeaway from this message. That's what the proposition will always be. Many times after God gives us a victory in our life, Satan retaliates quickly with another plan to defeat us. You see, he will not leave us alone. And the battles will continue, and they can become violent with great rage until the Lord comes. So let's begin reading in the text this evening as we unfold this narrative to our minds and hearts. And Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done and with all how he had slain all the prophets with the sword. And Jezebel sent a messenger unto Elijah saying, now here's the words of the vile woman herself. So let the gods do to me. Notice the word gods, little G-O-D-S. She's far from a believer. May I say to you that they had crossed a line, Are you ready for this? And with Ahab and Jezebel, they had crossed certain lines in their life. And though Ahab showed a time of repentance in his life, we certainly cannot look at his heart and know anything. But I remember what our pastor in Chattanooga said one time about powerful people. Some of them would even claim to be saved. And I heard him say this about a man. He said that this man in whom America is worshiping now at his death did more to lead people to hell than he ever did to lead people to heaven. You see, there's a time when there is no remedy. Sound familiar? This is what we're faced with here. So look at her words. So let the gods do to me, and more also, if I make not thy life as the life of one of them, speaking about the 450 prophets, by tomorrow about this time. There's the death warrant. And when he saw that, he arose and went for his life. That's the reaction of a very bold and courageous prophet. He knew the vile wickedness of a woman that was totally out of control and filled full of anger and hate and bitterness. And notice where he went. And he came to Beersheba. So that's quite a hike. Which belongeth to Judah, and left his servant there. Let's review just for a moment. Stop our reading just for a moment. And let's review about the cities and the places where Elijah ministered. You remember he was born in Tishbe. He was a Tishbite. And he was called by God to prophesy against the sins of Israel. So he was marked from the beginning. He was going to deal with their national sin face to face with the king. He was going to proclaim the drought, and it would stay for 3.5 years. He went to Samaria to do that. He met Ahab in Samaria and spoke to him face to face about that judgment. After that, he fled for his life by the brook Kereth. Then he obeyed the Lord after around 6 months when the brook dried up. After the ravens came and fed him twice a day, God told him to get back out in the open, which was a great risk because the king and the queen wanted to kill him. They were looking for him. He had pronounced this drought and it had come. They wanted to make a mockery of him. And so he traveled to Zarephath. That's some 90 miles north of the brook. And there he met a widow. Miracles took place, and God was finished with him there. And after 3 more years, it was now time for rain. And God called him to go down 50 miles south till he got to the foot of Carmel, and then climb up on Carmel and have the showdown between the prophets of Baal and God himself. After the rain started coming, you remember he took off some 25 miles and headed to Jezreel in a rainstorm. And now when he heard this messenger and heard him give the death warrant, he fled to Beersheba, over 100 miles south of where he was. He was getting out of Dodge as quick as he could. And then once he even got there, he went another day's journey into the wilderness. He wanted to be sure no one could find him. there he'd find himself underneath a juniper tree, wanting to die, overwhelmed with anxiety, frustration. He just couldn't see on the horizon how anything's going to turn out from this. This woman got her way. Look at verse 4. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a juniper tree, and he requested for himself that he might die. Lord, there's so much pressure with all this. Life's just not worth living anymore. I don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. Maybe the best thing for me to do is just die. Now watch what he said. Look at the words of the prophet. It is enough now, O Lord. Take away my life, for I am not better than my fathers. He reviewed his history and he said, God, just take me away. And this brings us to the first thought. And that is, I want you to see Elijah's displeasure tonight. And as we look at it, I want you to see three key elements of it that brought him to a place of being the total opposite. Now, melancholy in mind, not understanding what God had next for him, not wanting to live. Lord, the best thing you can do is just take me. I'm no better than my fathers. And he's discouraged. He does not know what to do. He was hated, and now he is being persecuted by Ahab. See, Ahab was the instigator, and Jezebel was the inflictor of pain. She was the one that plotted out to kill him and promised to do so. So notice with me in verse 1, the instigator. And I mentioned this in the introduction, but the distorted report that he gave Jezebel was not a fair, nor was it balanced. If Ahab lived today, Fox News would call him out. You can laugh. Because you know that's true. And Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done, and withal, how he had slain all the prophets with the sword. Now, I envision what happened that day in the palace. I just envisioned it. Now, this is just some common commentary. But I would imagine that the story went something like this. All your prophets are dead. Elijah slew them all. There was no emphasis on the fact that God did a work. You see, Ahab was still blind. So little emphasis was put on it's raining after 3.5 years. God has done a miracle. This man who prayed for 3.5 years that it would not rain, prayed and it did rain. It seems like, wouldn't it seem like that even a commoner could figure this out? Wouldn't it be easy to connect the dots? Here's the man who proclaimed it wasn't going to rain until he said it would rain. Here's a man who could call down fire and prove who Jehovah was when the prophets of Baal couldn't do anything. Here's a man who prayed and it rained. No, the emphasis was he killed your prophets. And that ignited the anger of Jezebel. You know, if I could make some application here just for a moment. Do you know that there are people who are master storytellers who can tell a story and emphasize the few little facts and twist them just a little bit, turn it just a little bit, color it just a little bit, and they can control someone else? I've seen little children and teenagers control their parents by what they said. Didn't report it all, just the part that they knew would control them. Listen, this is why we need discernment raising our children. Your children, whether you realize it or not, they are liars. That might be shocking, but it bothers me when I hear a mother say, you know, I heard these words in my study in Troy. Tommy has never lied to me. He was 16. I bet he was lying to her at 6 months, crying in the bed, wanting attention, when his diaper was dry and his tummy was full. He just wanted to be held. So we have to be discerning. It's a great lesson to understand this. When we allow someone to color or shade the truth enough to control us to where we're going to make a major decision, we have to be careful. Who's really the leader? Who's really calling the shots? Who's making the decisions? Ahab revealed the condition of his heart, and it was one of hardness. This man had a hard heart. For someone who witnessed the power of God that he witnessed on Mount Carmel and go home and report it the way he did to his wife. And when someone has a hard heart and they report it a wrong way, their heart gets harder. Now, here's how this works. Now, I want you to listen to this. This is important. When you harden your heart, when your children harden their heart, when your boss hardens his heart, now pay close attention to what I'm fixing to say. Then, according to Scripture, when God sees a heart consistently lying and being hardened, lying and being hardened to get their way, then, are you ready for this? They don't have to keep hardening their heart. Do you know who hardens it? Please don't say the devil. You harden your heart, and God will harden your heart. You say, Pastor, how can you say that? Have you ever read the book of Exodus? Pharaoh hardened his heart in chapter 8. But in the next chapter, God hardened his heart. And there are people today, because of their hard heart and how they wanted to manipulate, they are in deep trouble tonight. I mean deep trouble. Because they didn't have to keep hardening their heart. God does. It's an indictment against rebellion. Nobody gets away with it. Ahab was selfish. He would qualify, in what I've been preaching, as a nasty man. You remember the nasty man in Proverbs and how there was no remedy? He would qualify as the stubborn man who hardened his neck. And like many of the children of Israel, he was without remedy. His heart was hard. That's why it's very important for us not to harden our hearts toward God and His Word. He hardened his heart against God's man and the message he preached. It's an indictment. It's powerful. But not only was his heart hardened, but also his heart was filled full of hate. In chapter 22, you're close there. Why don't you just flip over there real quick? Ahab was talking to another prophet, Micaiah, one day, and he admitted his emotional feelings toward the prophet. Look at verse 8. Say those three words with me. Have you read them already? I hate him. So here he is admitting to the prophet, I hate Elijah. Oh, how someone who can turn our hearts and we pick up their offense, we want to come to their rescue and be their shining knight. Instead of God teaching them a lesson, instead of letting God work in hearts, they harden their heart. What happens is the real truth comes out. I hate her. I hate my teacher. I hate the judge. I hate the attorney. I hate the prosecutor. Those words start out when they were in your home and a brother and sister got in a fight and one said to the other, I hate you. That's where this starts. That's where a hard heart starts. I hate you. When a teenager will proclaim that against his own parents. I've heard it. I've heard it out of their mouths many times. So you see, it's easy for us to understand Elijah's displeasure and his discouragement. He had an instigator in his life that stirred up his wife, stirred her up through just how he put a twist on the truth. That's why I urge parents, please don't let your 40-pound child control a 200-pound daddy. It's just not right. Don't let a sweet daughter control a mother. It's just not right. They are the child. They're not telling you what to do. You're to tell them what to do. You're the parent. So when we look into these indictments, we can draw out of them principles. Oh, we don't like them sometimes. I remember many times, and you've heard, I haven't said it in a long, long time, several years. But I remember just right after I got saved, I would tell Dolly, we're not coming back to this church. I am not going to hear him preach again. I am not going to do it. And come the next Sunday, I'd go. I'm so grateful that I did. But I got angry at him. I didn't like his preaching. But today I love him. He's in a nursing home. The last time I saw him, he'd been 3 days in the hospital and the nurses had not shaved him. And he said, I sure wish somebody would shave me. And I said, Pastor, I'll be honored to. I soaped him all up. And the man that I once proclaimed that I hate, I found myself in the nursing home shaving him. And him hugging me and thanking me. It's a big difference, isn't it? And it's amazing how my own children, as old as they are, have come and thanked me and said, Daddy, thank you for not letting me do what I wanted to do. it would have been a mistake. Thank you for holding me down. It's worth it. It's worth it. Every life is. Would you stand with me, please?